Voices that inspire the extended interview.
Wilson Baker, and I'm a biologist and specialize in field work.
So, Wilson, how did you find your way to Florida?
Well, I grew up in Pennsylvania, spent summers in New Hampshire, went to school in Indiana, then started graduate work at Athens, University of Georgia. And then when I was at Georgia, I heard about a job at Tall Timbers and applied and got in.
So what was it like? When did you come to Tall Timbers?
In the 60s, late 66, as the first full-time staff when they were getting organized to a new research station.
Wow. So all the old guard was there then?
As directors.
Talk about some of the people that were behind Tall Timbers.
It was mainly the two Comerics, and Betty Comeric, Ed's wife, Ed and Roy and Betty Comeric, Leon Neal and Mr. Stoddard were some of the main ones that put it together.
And Mr. Stoddard, he's the one who really birthed this concept of fire, right? And using fire as a tool.
Yeah, but it came about through his research on bobwhite quail. So he's mainly known as the Bible for bobwhite quail in those early years. One of the first long-term wildlife management projects in the country.
How did it feel for you, this young, recently graduate, to get in at such an early level of something so exciting?
Just sort of lucky. Everything just fit together. When I was at Georgia, I worked under Dr. Odom, a well-known ecologist, in the museum there. And then I took a project as I was finishing my thesis. And while I was finishing that, Ed Comeric called Gene Odom and asked if there's anybody there that he'd recommend to apply for a job at Tall Timbers. I went down and everything was kind of perfect because the Comerics and Stoddard I had the same background as they did, basically, so we really hit it off.
How old were you?
Oh, what would it be, 25 maybe?
What was it like in Tallahassee and when you came here? It must have felt like a very different place than what it is now.
Very different. In fact, I did most of my dealings because of the Comerics in Thomasville, because Tall Timbers is basically halfway between the two cities and also Cairo. So I started banking and doing most of my shopping there and then gradually did more into Tallahassee. And of course, Tall Timbers is a Tallahassee address.
So what were the first things you did when you came to Tall Timbers?
Well, for a while, naturally, just getting a feel for things, and the Comerics let me basically do what I wanted to or see what I wanted to do, and then they'd agree or not. So there's this various station duties that I did, and then basically you might say half-time I could either do what amounted to my interest, bird or mammal research. Some of the station duties were like curating the collection, the map, mainly mammals and birds. There were some insects, too. Kept up with the fire plots that were being burned at different schedules throughout the year. Anyway, with Stoddard's interest in knowledge of ornithology, I worked with him, and my own interest in his were about the same, and like I was thinking, and had always wanted to either work on red-cockaded woodpecker or the Bachman sparrow, the piney wood sparrow. And so we talked that over, and I ended up picking the red-cockaded woodpecker as a main study feature. But also I was doing small mammal work to find out what all was on Tall Timbers and curate the mammal collection there.
So was the red-cockaded already identified as an endangered species at that point?
There was a lot of talk about it then. I think it was 1970 maybe that it officially became a federally listed endangered species. One of the first groupings that they put birds up for that status. And a lot of that was because of Mr. Stoddard's influence, because he worked on the plantations where there were good populations still red-cockaded, but the writing was on the walls that they are declining elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. So where do you think your love for sort of the natural world, where did that come from?
I'm sure it started with my parents. They were, I guess you'd say, nature lovers, but they wanted their children to do outdoor things, whether it was sports or nature. And for instance, I got into birding and became real big, probably at age about 14 or so, keeping life lists and local lists, county lists, the listing phase of the fun birding. So they always encouraged doing things outside, and that was me from when I can remember on. And I was lucky that I could end up doing what I thought was my main interest and fun for my whole life, which a lot of people haven't been able to do for one reason or another.
And you're still watching birds and counting birds and...
Other than birds, I've gotten into a lot of other things. And I've always had an interest in mammals, mainly small mammals, everything from rodents to bats. A lot of work on bats. But I've done Lepidoptera, butterflies, and moths, and various other insects, including parasites on small mammals, ticks and fleas. And the naturalist in me, that there's no group of things that can't get your interest, and not enough time to work on everything, but you try and get fairly proficient in a lot of phases.
It must be so great for you because you can go outside and never be bored.
Correct, yeah.
Tell me about that, like that part of this passion of yours.
It's just that ever since a child, I have, I think what some people have termed the curious naturalist, just the awe and the wanting to learn more about what I'm seeing. And that leads you into wanting to know the life histories of things and the ecology, how they fit into the environment. And that leads you into liking a, say, a particular plant community enough that you want it good quality sites to be saved, so you end up being an advocate for certain things. So it's just a progression.
Talking about helping things be saved, one of the more recent things you've done is be able to identify the site in Cairo with the trout lilies at Wolf Creek.
Right.
How did, talk a little bit about what Wolf Creek is and what you've done there.
Well, it's an interesting history, and two botanists I learned a lot from, Angus Golson and Bob Godfrey, in the early years. Angus actually found this site along 84 in Grady County that had the trout lilies and also spotted trilliums, two rare things in the coastal plain of South Georgia. And he and Dr. Bob and other people would look at it every once in a while because it was special, but they never went back into the property to see how extensive it was. And quite a few years later, I ended up going back in, and the trout lilies didn't stop. It went, I don't know, maybe a half mile in from the road. They'd always looked at it in the road right away, which was a great population there. I thought that we needed some sort of protections because it was so unusual. And then I got with Dan Miller, a local native plant grower. And we both worked different angles. And to make a long story short, we got a grant and private donations and put it together enough that we could buy the land. And because we got a grant, that was related to getting places, small tracts for municipals set aside. So technically Grady County owns this property. But then the interesting thing, they don't have the money or the resources to really manage another property. So they've agreed that local volunteers will keep it up and manage it. And so we have a little committee that does that, keeps up the trails and puts out signs. And we're just gradually working into how much public access we can have and support.
So the season for the trout lilies is usually like February. And yeah. And that how many people do you think came and visited to see the lilies in bloom this past February?
It's really amazing how many people have come to see this site after the words got out on email, Facebook, and various things. In recent years, thanks to Margaret Tyson in Cairo, she's a local person that's a full-time volunteer, you might say, and so she gets the word out. And the trout lilies start blooming in, say, in January, and then peak in February, and then wane, and say by late April or May, you wouldn't even know the lilies are there because they go back and the leaves die down and all. But this year, I haven't heard from Margaret. We've had up to maybe 1,000 people come, which really impresses particularly the local Grady County people. That several people have said they can't believe people come from Atlanta and North Alabama just to see flowers. So that's been a lot of fun, and the volunteers all are into it. The whole project is real neat.
So thinking of the long arc of your career from, you know, coming down as a young person to Tall Timbers, learning about the flora and the fauna and the animals that live in this region, to now, where you still have impact, whether it's through identifying these flowers in a particular place, what has made this career so satisfying for you?
Well, my career has been so satisfying and fun because it's what I wanted to do, and then end up in an area that has so much neat properties. And from a protection standpoint, what came about, I was doing research at Tall Timbers, then I went into consulting business, and that allowed me to develop a lot of other phases of my interest and knowledge. And then when Tall Timbers started a conservation easement program, I went back with them for, it was probably 5 or 6 years. And that was real fulfilling because you worked with private landowners. And what I really enjoyed and felt like it was doing some good, talking to the managers and landowners after you've found some interesting things on their property, tell them about it and get them interested in it to the point that they're proud of it or at least want to protect it and manage right. So you get into the wildlife management background that I had at Georgia. You asked about my upbringing, and even in retirement, I'm full-time doing these same things. In fact, I've last, 15 years, I guess. I've been working with Richard Carter. He's the botanist at Valdosta State University. Real good field person. And the two of us have done plant surveys, 3 or 4 major tracts. So that's an excuse to stay out in the field, which is me.
Which is what keeps you, I think, keeps you so vibrant. Because you're out every day somewhere.
I want to be anyway, even if I'm not, yeah. Right.
Do you have a particular favorite flower or bird from this region?
Not really. I guess I'm a little odd that I don't pick favorites, but if anything, I've picked favorite major plant communities, and one of them that I've is my favorite is the pine. Upland pines, particularly longleaf pine wiregrass type community that I've had a lot of experience, not just in South Georgia and North Florida, but also in the coastal plain of the Southeast. So that's been one of my specialties, to the point that trying to get high quality sites preserved one way or another. And that's where the conservation easements have come in and other methods. So you go from trying to be knowledgeable of the community to being an advocate for the community. Another major plant association that I've been involved in, and of course all the critters that are in those habitats, is on the east side of the Apalachicola River between Bristol and Chattahoochee, which is a real hot spot for biodiversity. In fact, being lucky to get the job here and learn about this area, it kind of coincides with the nation knowing that this is a hot spot. Not that it was a lot of early biologists thought it was a hot spot, but it's sort of been claimed with data as one of the hot spots of biodiversity in the whole nation. So that was a kind of a lucky that I happened to land here in such a rich environment. And we're so lucky in the Thomasville-Tallahassee region to have so much public land right close with all different kinds of habitats, let alone private lands that have limited access.
Do you think, I'm sure it's, I know the answer, I just sort of want you to say it, that your love for this region has come from being able to be so a part of it, to learn about it, to walk it, to see it, to study it. I mean, you have such knowledge of what makes this area unique. So few people have that knowledge. I'm rambling now because I'm trying to how to phrase this. How do we get more people to be able to realize how unique biologically this region is?
Well, as far as there's quite a bit of information in the scientific literature how rich this particular area is, all of us need to get out and let people know more. But I got real rewards by becoming good friends with a lot of people, researchers working in the same area, but also the landowners and managers and foresters of the region. To interact with them has been a real pleasurable and learning experience. And we all learn together, and it's a neat, fairly small group, but a lot of fun.
What keeps you inspired in this work, even in retirement, to go out on a hot day or a cold day or rainy day? What keeps you inspired?
I've been inspired I guess you'd say I was born with the curiosity and interest and always wanting to learn more about it. And then it just comes naturally where weather and other things don't really enter in. If you want to go out and do something, you do it any time of year. And it's hard to explain to people that aren't into what I'm into and have become, so it's hard to explain, really. But I'm sure it's the upbringing and then mentors. I didn't mention a main mentor at my small liberal arts college in Indiana, Jim Cope, who really triggered me into a lot of interest in biology and museum work and everything associated with it. And then, of course, like I mentioned, the Comerics had that same, and Mr. Stoddard, that same background with major museums in the country and all the natural history and field work involved. So it's a building thing, but I've always had that curiosity, particularly wanting to get out. And I was into sports too, which got me out, but becoming a naturalist is another whole phase of being out.
What advice would you give to somebody who's moves to this area and they want to get to know it better? What advice would you give?
Maybe if somebody's starting out, either find somebody and start talking to them and get their advice, but then also join some conservation groups that take field trips like Audubon or Sierra or Native Plant groups, or there's a world of different groups. And then you meet people and you also get started knowing some interesting areas they show you, and then you can either keep with the group or branch off on your own, but it gives you a good start and beginning. And it shows you other people are interested. You just aren't an oddball with binoculars running out in the woods. There's other people. There's a lot of oddballs out there with binoculars running out in the woods.
So find your people.
Yeah.
Are there any plants named after you, Wilson? Do you have any named things?
I have several critters. One plant, a coreopsis. I guess the common name is tick seed. And then of all things, a parasite, a fluke type thing that in quail. And then a beetle in pocket gopher runways and associated with a pocket gopher, which is a keystone species with probably a lot of species in their underground burrows that haven't even been described yet.
So there's always still new things to learn.
For sure.
I love that about that world, your world.
There's new things, even in things that have, quote, been worked quite a bit, let alone you can pick some fields that's just wide open, particularly in different arthropods or fungi or different things that have been overlooked. But there's just so many things. And that's the fun thing that amateurs can always contribute to so-called citizen science, because there's so much we don't know, even in things you think are generally known. Some of the specifics aren't.
Well, we got a lot of good stuff from you. Is there any final thing you want to say?
No.
To that listener who might be driving home and maybe needs a little nudge to go outside?
Yeah, just encourage you to get outside and, quote, follow your dream, or hope there's something out there that impresses you that you want to learn more about. It can be as simple as knowing its name, common name or scientific name, or knowing its life history or ecology of the plant or animal. It's just a fun thing to get into, and I was lucky to make it a life's work. And of course, on some of these things, life's work, you don't think of salary. Wilson Baker, and I'm a biologist, specialize in field work.